Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 357. We're traveling abroad. We're going to hop a train to Scotland tomorrow morning. Super fun show in London at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thanks if you came out for that. It's like 12:45 at night. Skydart's editing a video. I'm recording this. The Swedish couple in the next room is banging each other's...
You know they're Swedish.
I thought they were Swedish.
What makes you think they're Swedish?
Because the way
the
they talk.
Swedish. The bed creeping.
And then he goes, pork. Anyway, they are...
It was pretty quick, though. It lasted about 30 seconds.
It really did. We're not going to say that that's indicative of all Swedes, but it was definitely sex squeaks. It's the springing in the bed.
Definitely.
And so it was longer than someone just rolling out of bed, but really not long enough to have been satisfying to anyone, except for probably the dude.
Maybe.
But it really was about 45 seconds.
That's what happens with Swedish girls. I mean, they are that hot.
I was going to say that's what happens when Buddy starts slapping from doing the wild thing. It's before your time.
I have no idea what the fuck you're
God damn it. Oh, man.
Get back to your intro.
All right, I'll do it on my rascal. I'd like to thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist
Sorry,
Podcast.
I thought the sound was
up. Why don't you put headphones on if you're going to edit your video?
It's more fun when I can make you hear it.
For whom?
Me!
Put your headphones in.
Go back to Shutterstock. Go on.
Shutterstock.com has the perfect video for your next creative project. Whether it's a website or advertisement, a multimedia presentation, any type of film project, you're going to choose from over 700,000 high-quality stock video clips, 2D animations, 3D motion graphics. They have digital formats. A lot of them come in HD. Shutterstock sources video clips from around the world and puts them at your fingertips. They add 10,000 new video clips every week, so every time you visit, you're going to find something new. They give you assets that you need to bring your creative projects to the next level. It's a complete offering. They have excellent customer service, dedicated reps, 24-hour support throughout the week, flexible pricing. So just go to Shutterstock.com. There's no credit card needed. You start an account, begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project's going to look like, and then save video selections that you find into your clip box. Once you decide to purchase, use the offer code NERDIST5, and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. 30% off all new accounts. Use the offer code NERDIST5. And now, this episode of the podcast is our old buddy Kyle Kinane, which we recorded this a couple months back, and because I had a bunch of other time-sensitive ones to go up, and so now I can put up a buddy Kyle, who I just saw over in... Oh my god, where was I performing? Austin! Texas, yes, Moon Tower. Oh, I've been in so many zip codes and cities in the past month. So here's Kyle Kinane, Nerdist Podcast, with the full crew. One more thing you should know about this episode. It just ends abruptly. I have no idea what happened. The recording equipment, which we don't use anymore, so you don't have to tell us to fix it, just stopped. Like, the podcast just stops at about an hour 11 or hour 12 in. But I can tell you that it was... All you really miss at the end is us just wrapping up the conversation and being like, all right, enjoy your burrito. So I'll front load this one with enjoy your burrito. Pre-enjoy your burrito. Enjoy your pre-rito. So because that's not going to happen at the end. The conversation just cuts off abruptly. Yes, it's weird, but this is how it is. It really was only like another 2 minutes. So you're not missing that much. You're fine. Listen, it was probably... The most golden 2 minutes of the podcast ever was lost, and I don't remember what it was because it was a while ago, so... Here's number 357, Kyle Kinane.
Now entering Nerdist.com. really thought I was going to convince you to just turn over the Nerdist Twitter handle by looking up to the sky. When I said brand,
it just
went up in the air.
Yeah, no, I have. I signed on. My first Twitter account was at Hardwick, like in, I don't know, 2007 or 8.
Yeah, and then you were like, I better get my SEO together.
I just never, I just didn't use it. But when I started the Nerdist website, I was like, well, I should probably just have the Nerdist Twitter handle. Like, it just made sense to me to do that.
He's brilliant, everybody.
That's what I did.
And that's why we're here today with Kyle Kinane.
It's all boiled down to this moment with Kyle Kinane.
Yeah. We got so big, we were able to get our friend to come
back. To be fair, Kyle has become quite the famous comedian, Jonah.
You know, who's probably just waking up around time for the podcast.
Yeah. Kyle, we can get him in here.
You know what he did last night?
A recorded voiceover for Comedy Central?
Nope.
No, I did that this morning. Between barf belches, I taped Drunk History last night.
You did!
That's why I'm here in spite of a bottle of tequila.
Okay.
But not in me anymore.
No.
What? What was your historical situation?
I did the Haymarket Riot in Chicago.
Oh, great.
Yeah, yeah. Nicely done.
Did you reference the band at any point?
No, I didn't. I had to look it up, too. I was a terrible historian. Yeah. Like, oh, you're doing Chicago? I can do all kinds of Chicago. I don't know anything about Chicago.
I would imagine most people probably know who you are who listen to the podcast, but you're for the longest time, I think you kind of, and I don't know if you admit this, but you sort of have that Louis C.K. thing where whenever you're on stage, like the other comedians come back in the room to watch you. I don't know if you know that or would admit that, but my experience is that is the case with you, yeah, where it's like, you gotta fucking. You don't think so?
I don't know.
He just doesn't get as drunk anymore. It's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't the material.
We have to watch Brendan Walsh now for that.
No, it was yeah, that's nice to know. I have that fear that I'm getting like road flattened. I'm on the road so much and then I write material out there and I come back to LA and try it and I'm like, "Oh, this is not good."
I had that exact same experience at Kurt and Kristen's hot tub show.
Oh yeah.
I've been in road mode for so long.
Road mode.
Well, just road mode, you can you're doing an hour, you have time to fuck around, you have time to breathe.
Yeah.
And then when someone's like, "Come back here and do 10 minutes for hipsters." And you're like, "This feels weird." Like it totally threw me off.
And like being jovial, like you start a set and you're jovial on the road, like, "All right, let's get into it."
People
and nobody cares.
No, they don't. It was a fun show, but it sort of felt like, oh, yeah, this is a different speed than what I'm used to.
Yeah. I just, like, 10 minutes, I'm like, "I'll screw around. People like me." Yeah. Oh, I'm doing terribly. Right now.
I get that just because, like, every week being at the Meltdown show, like, you know, like, and when we go out on the road, we'll do, like, Nerdist shows and, like, people know us and, like, people know me at that show. I'd be like, "I'm just a personable, funny guy. I can just make anything funny."
Yeah.
And then I'll do another show in town and I'd be like, "I'm just going to talk about the time I was here playing in a band and I threw up on the drum set." And and then just everyone's just like, "No."
Yeah, no. I've been labeled storyteller, and it's like, well, no, just bullshitter.
Yeah.
It's just bar bullshittery is all it is like sitting around. But like, "Oh, so I'm a storyteller now. I'm going to just tell a story."
Yeah.
I can spin a comedy yarn.
Yeah. This is like, it turns out it was just me going to get lunch.
But that's what I love about Sean Patton has that great thing where he has like, he tells this great story about losing his virginity like really young. But then at the end of it, like, he's like, "And I guess since this is a fucking story, I have to tell you about the moment where I learned something." And like, it just like, it makes fun of all like storytellers that like, you know, guys that don't want to do stand up. So they'll just go to storytelling shows.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you started in, you're a Chicago comedy guy.
Yeah, yeah.
What was, when did you start and what was the scene like?
It was 99. It was with all the guys, Pete Holmes and Kumail and
You know everyone
Bronger.
That's doing really well in comedy right now? Chicago 99.
Chicago's the new Boston.
Yeah.
Like the generation of comics before,
so
it was like,
people.
It was Boston.
So many people
like
that are
the,
just killing
the
it.
The Bill Burrs and the, was it Bill Burrs and the Geraldos and the.
Well, I guess I missed my Boston time.
By a long shot, man.
Because you're going to fucking Dave Matthews concerts. You should have been doing
stand-up.
That's
what we were doing in Boston.
That's what I think. Street brawling at a Dave Matthews concert.
Yeah. It was the slowest, softest punches I've ever seen in my entire life.
But you really felt it. Like,
you felt
in
it
your heart.
In your heart. Yeah.
And then that lackadaisical attitude spilled out into the street.
I got punched with a potpourri sash made out of hemp.
Oh, man.
It wasn't even
the
a...
cops had to come and break it up. Instead of shooting beanbags, they were shooting hacky sacks. Yeah.
We just played, man. We just played. Yeah.
It was crazy, man. I lost a flip flop. You don't even know, man. It was wild.
So where did you guys? Where did you guys start? Was it basically just like sort of an alternative comedy scene, or like were there?
Yeah, it was a bunch of guys that never wanted to go. Never wanted to go on the road, but. I mean, you know how it was back then doing
No, I know everybody you mentioned. It was a bunch of guys who never wanted to go on the road.
Well, yeah, because the road was...
At that time.
If you think in 99, it was just doing one-nighters for drunks,
yeah.
Which is still a lot of what the road is now.
Comedy was in a bad state in 99 in terms of, like, touring comedy was in a real bad state because there was no comedy on television anymore. People weren't really going to clubs.
There was none of that kind of
stuff. Yeah, so it was just sort of, there were basically, I think, a generation of kind of recycled comics just doing all the same clubs and you know, at that time.
The few road gigs I had, I remember one was at like a snowmobile bar in Wisconsin.
That's a real thing.
Yeah, you take
snowmobiles to it.
Snowmobile up. And it was weird because the direction's there. And, like, it is one of those, I don't want to Andy Rooney shit up here, but it's like, oh, yeah, I just had to, like, listen to a guy and write down directions and just snow-covered darkness in the backwoods of Wisconsin to go make $50.
And then if you got lost, there's no way to call that guy back.
Yeah. And then one of the directions is like, all right, you can pull in, you're going to see a Green Bay Packers bar. Our bar is behind that bar. There's two bars on the same property, not next to each other, but one behind the other.
How was the
Minnesota
show?
Minnesota Vikings
bar. It was terrible.
So from there, you're...
But that was the road, so everybody's like,
the
I'm
UP, the Upper Peninsula.
And then the guy, the headliner... He's like, these people can say whatever they want. I got a 45 under the seat of my car. And I'm like, oh. And found out later that guy had gone to jail for something or another. I was like, oh, how's so-and-so doing? It was kind of like, oh, yeah, he's in prison.
He killed someone at a bar. Yeah, and
probably rightfully so. I mean, one less racist heckler. That's a better world. But so nobody left. Like, we're just like, we're going to do comedy because we like doing comedy. There's no, like, I don't want to go do that and ruin this thing I enjoy. I don't have to drive around playing for jerks. In babysitting, more or less. So everybody just stayed in town, just like and like really enjoyed just doing the open mics and going, oh, you got new stuff. Oh, who's got new stuff? Have you heard? And we were just geeked out about it.
What was the place called? It was a
Lion's Den. Lion's Den. Steve Heiser wrote a real good article.
Yeah, that's a great article.
About the open mic that kind of pushed
this Heiser's
all
out. A great writer. He's fucking. Yeah. He writes such great comedy. Reviews from the standpoint of someone who is I encourage people to look up Steve Heiser online, but. He writes comedy views from the point of view, especially in a world where reviewers tend to like to, rather than review something, try to show you how smart they are. Like they try to overwrite.
Yeah.
So instead of really getting a sense of whether someone's good or not, they want you to be like, this guy's fucking hilarious. Here's the real comic is this reviewer. But Heisler actually writes really good, well thought out.
He's a fan. Yeah.
He's a comedy fan. And, you know, even when he's kind of, you know, shutting something down, it's you don't feel like it's in a way where he's trying to show you his writing chops. Like, he just does it in a nice way.
Like, comedy reviews are all kind of kid gloves. Like they're all, like, nobody really will take a swing at
You don't
comedy.
Think so?
AV Club gets pretty...
AV Club
commenters get...
You know, but AV Club commenters can go eat an asshole.
Yeah.
You're among friends, Kyle.
I really haven't heard much, but like the self-importance of internet comments.
But the thing is, this
just
right now,
faceless courage.
This right now, like because it's like they talked about us again. You know, we're getting it. We're doing it, guys.
You are doing it.
I always hate kind of having the sort of the. It's like it sort of forces you to have the point of view of the uncool teacher in the class, where it's like. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can sit in the back of the room and pass notes and snicker and make horrible comments. What are you doing with your life?
Well, and then realizing that the only people reading those comments are me. And then anybody that's responded to the comments. Nobody's been like, what's popular opinion? And then read all the comments. I mean, I think that isn't it just other commenters that are fighting each other?
Yeah, it's the commenters
thing?
Who read it and whoever's being written about. Who reads it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
it's
it.
Not like, I don't think like there's not an audience. But I guess it's just, you know, the psychology of seeing your stuff up there on the screen.
Although
like,
when my voice is heard. I think Jonah does this too. Forgive me if I'm incorrect, but when I
forgive you.
feel bad about myself, I go find a review of something I love.
Yeah, I do that.
Jonah,
yeah.
we almost talked about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, but something... Oh, it was when...
if you're going to point at me, use a money clip.
It's when... here's my Starbucks card.
There's more where that
We were just about
from.
To touch on that, and it was when Jimmy Pardo came in for that one Hostel podcast we were doing. We never talked about it, but the idea that you'll go to, like, someone reviewing Louis C.K. or someone else and look at the comments and people are like, this guy sucks, and you're like, okay, good. So there are those people for everyone.
Yeah, that's how I, like, that's what I did after my my record came out. I read this, like, this guy... reviewed my record, and the guy, like, I looked up what he looked like. He looks like me. He just looks like me, and everything was, you know, like, this guy surrounded himself with funny people. I was like, yes, what you want, isn't it? And we even have a same name in the somewhere in there, too. And, like, I was, like, I'm really upset about it, and I was like, you know what? Like, and I thought about, like, some of my favorite records. Like, it's like, you know, one of my favorite records of all time, Pinkerton by Weezer. But it's like, if you read reviews of when that came out, it was fucking, like, it was shit on by everybody. Or it's like, so what I would do, I was go to, like, YouTube and then look up a Louis C.K. video or a Mitch Hedberg or, like, you know, or other people that I even just like a lot. Mm. And then you just see people shitting on them. You're like, you know what? Fuck everybody. Who cares?
It's easier if you just go to iTunes, look up your favorite comedy album, and then sort by least to best.
Oh, yeah, that's most critical.
Oh, that's so easy. That's going to save a lot of time.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's funny because people say... You know, I mean, I pretty much stopped reading comments because it just was just no.
I can't get to that point. I need you to tell me how to get.
Well,
to
here's
that
a,
point.
Here's the thing.
That's what we say.
And here's Beyonce. I am Beyonce.
Doesn't apply anymore, as far as I'm concerned, because of their publicist.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing is that, you know, when people say to comedians like, "Well, just ignore it. They're just trolls." And what I think people need to understand is that comedians of almost anyone else are hypersensitive because that is what we do.
Yeah.
We are sponges that try to re-express things into the world on stage, and you have to be hypersensitive.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a certain amount of insecurity. There's a lot of insecurity, and there's a lot of negative stuff, but just by virtue of the fact of what we do, we are just naturally sensitive to the world.
Yeah, it's actually, here's a funny thing.
God, like, damn it, and I just, you know, it's funny as I said that, like, some shitty comment just popped into my head that someone says was like, I wish Hardwick would stop trying to remind us that he's a real comic. Like, I'm going to talk about my life.
I got something for you, Sponge Hardwick. Yeah.
But it was funny. Matt and Matt took a picture of, like, me and him, like, when we were, like, hanging out. And then some guy on his Instagram, like, said, you got to get away from Jonah Ray. He's the worst. And I'm like,
the worst.
And then I was like,
not even worse.
I was like, well, if I'm the worst, I commented back to the guy, if I'm the worst, why is he friends with me and not you?
Was that the one where
is that he replied?
The guy replies with proximity.
And then, that's kind of funny.
And I was like, and then, like, I had Matt block him.
What was the one on Instagram where someone said something to you and you went on her profile and it was just pictures of her kid and you just said, fuck you and your shitty kid.
I almost did it again with this guy.
I was like,
who the fuck is this motherfucker? Who's this motherfucker? Oh, he's got a picture of the kid. I'm just going to say his kid smells dumb.
Fuck you and your shitty kid.
Why, I never. Yeah. Yeah, but, like, the guy was like, he started commenting on my feed.
Yeah, because I
like,
blocked him, so he went and commented on Jonah's
feed. Did Matt block me on Instagram because of what I said to you? I was like, you just said one of his really good friends is the worst.
And his really good friend convinced him to block him.
Well, to be honest, Matt said, you want me to block him? And I said, well, I'm not going to say either way, but yes.
But if you want to remain friends.
You won't block anybody?
I won't block anybody.
Oh, it's so gratifying, Kyle.
No, I don't think it. I think it's gratifying to them when they see they've been blocked.
So? Oh, I'm like, no, you have to wait it out.
Open
you have
channel.
To wait it out.
And I have another theory on this too. Is that is it bad for us in our culture to basically spoil ourselves and only surround ourselves with people who are saying good things about us? Like, is that potentially detrimental to what we do? Because it's sort of a false reading.
But where's the bad message coming from? Somebody saying you suck with, you know, the anonymity of the internet.
Yeah.
I don't buy. If I go on stage and a joke doesn't get a laugh, I know it's a shitty joke.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I'll take that. Yeah. I'm not, somebody was talking like, oh, I want to try open mics. I'd probably have all my friends there, though. I'm like, no, I never wanted my friends there.
No one ever did.
Embarrassment, and then I wanted a gauge of, do strangers laugh at this?
Yeah.
You know? So that has something. That also has something to do with going on the road and doing gigs that, like, you get a reputation. Now people just come because they know you. But that can be the beginning of the end because people just laugh at, they just accept anything you say.
Well, they do to a point. I think the jokes still have to, they not only, I mean, the other side of that is that they come with high expectations.
Yeah,
so it's not, yes, there is a certain amount of forgiveness because I think it just takes, because that's happening with that. That's happening. The same thing's happening for me is that people are coming on purpose, which is a relatively new thing.
Yeah, it's like, oh no, I'm supposed to surprise you, but like, this scumbag's kind of funny. Like, yeah. I'm supposed to surprise
remember those first
you.
Remember those first seven, yeah, the first 7 minutes when you got to let the crowd know it's okay to like you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you could do your set. Now they come in and they know stuff. And sure, the downside of that is like, well, I'm just performing for my friends. But. Mm. They also do expect you, like, they can be more disappointed in you than just a regular papered crowd of people that got free tickets
to
the show.
Yeah, that's true, because they were hoping for it. I mean, my thing, I want to go back to the internet comment like, and all that stuff, though. Like, no, like I could relax about, like, knowing, like, if I'm out at a bar, a party, like, oh, that guy, look at that entertaining guy in the corner and everybody likes him. That guy's never going to say, oh, yeah, I comment on YouTube videos all day. That's what I do. Like, that makes me like, oh, because if you go and, like, somebody say, like, Twitter, it's like, you know, I read the stuff. And so somebody just be like, you know, go fuck yourself, whatever. And then you go to their account, it's like, how do you have 50,000 tweets, 100 followers?
Yeah.
Like, that means you're a I just picture a hoarder. I just picture a hoarder when I see that.
And what about those 100 people?
Just had a computer
what about those 100 people that are dealing with all these tweets?
To be fair, a lot of them are probably spam bots.
Yeah, it's not, yeah.
Is that like a robot that makes spam for you anytime you want it?
That's why, spam bots. Twice a week I tweet about iPhones and jobs. I get the spam bots in.
Get those numbers up. Fluff those numbers.
I just say porno, and then it's like a tons.
Chat. Say chat, too. That'll bring them in.
I don't know. For some reason, I just got this image in my head of the new Marco Polo game is porno for pyros. I don't know
what?
Why. Wow. I don't know.
Really
my brain just went in a weird direction.
I like this.
Yeah, I don't know what.
That was only played for a few years in the 90s. That's a game.
That's a band I was fine forgetting about until now.
Yeah. It's like, Mike Watt. Mike Watt was in that band.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Nobody's telling Perry Farrell to stop.
No. Keeps going.
Nobody's telling him, hey.
Look at that guy's vest.
Take a break.
That's a Perry Farrell vest.
This is the third time in a week that Joel McHale has walked. My God,
too slow.
I got you.
Vest guy has been unaffected by this
still
whole
killing
thing.
It.
Whole time, the guy.
That guy's got a game. Take a picture of Vest guy. We'll blur his face.
I don't want to take a picture of
that guy's. That guy's getting 3 more months.
He's being blocked by knit hat.
I just the other day, like, I saw this like fucking idiot. This girl like just dressed like a fucking moron walking down the street. And normally I would like pull out my phone and take a picture of it and just like tweet like it's like don't dress like this. And then I stopped.
Wait a minute.
And I stopped myself and I was like, this is what being an adult is all about.
Wait a minute.
And I tweeted, or just not being a
wait
jerk.
A minute.
What?
Wait a minute.
What?
You just went on a tiny rant about people trolling on the internet, and then you're going to troll someone in life with their picture?
I'm not going to put their face in it.
Oh, you blur their
face.
I'm
just going to show how much.
Yeah, we all did
stupid.
Collectively just laugh at this dude with the vest. Like, fuck you, vest guy.
Yeah, what do you think of his Netflix envelope? Quick.
Yeah.
Oh, what would be in that guy's? I look at that guy, and I think of the guy that. John Cusack's character in High Fidelity describes the guy that's fucking his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like, you know, he liked whatever world music was popular that week. You know, this guy
smells
patchouli stink out of my store. I bet he's the guy who thinks he's way on, like, he's ahead of the curve, but in that envelope is Giro jeans with sushi.
I'll tell you that guy. That's the guy when you go to any restaurant, even a non-Asian restaurant, and they give him silverware. He was like, I brought my own chopsticks. Like, that's the guy.
No matter what restaurant.
No matter what restaurant.
It's going to be a great steak. It's okay. I brought my own chopsticks.
They're just more efficient, you guys.
That's bamboo. So
yeah.
I think he probably put that vest on and off at least 3 times today. I don't think he was sure about it.
You think so?
How many times do you think he buttoned it and then unbuttoned it and then buttoned it?
So I think
describe it had a, like an almost Southwest feel.
It was a Southwestern vest, but like not... not like a cool take on Southwestern Fest, like the kind of, I used to, my ex-girlfriend's from Tucson, so we spent a lot of time in Tucson every year. We'd go there for New Year's. And it was like, it's like one of those truck stops that you stop at on the way to Phoenix or Tucson. And then it's just like they have crazy shirts and then some,
it's always the
and some vests.
Pattern. And that weird, that thing playing the flute. What do they call that? That's in
the pan flute thing.
But it's the figure of the guy like.
Oh, yeah. With the crazy hair.
Everywhere.
I don't know.
That guy's dressed like the guy who does the books at the Alamo. Like the guy that like it's like he's just in charge of keeping the business
and let's
side
not,
together.
Let's not
wait,
skip
you mean
on
the Alamo
fact.
Draft House or the literal Alamo.
No, the Alamo, the actual
let's,
Alamo.
What kind of books do they have?
Let's not we cannot ignore the fact that he was wearing this unironic Southwestern vest over a denim shirt.
It was well. I think he's a roadie for Mumford and Sons. They still dress smartly.
Yes,
he was in the band when it was Mumford and Cousins, but they shut it down.
You're the loose fucking yeah. I saw when I first saw Mumford and Sons, I was so excited to see that the singer was just this guy that looked like he was made out of Guinness. He just fucking has got a, like a layer over him.
I would love to be made out of Guinness.
I haven't seen them or really heard them. I'm like an old man when it comes to anything pop culture. I don't know what's going on.
You don't listen to The Rock, K-Rock?
No.
You haven't seen Jiro James' Sushi?
I haven't seen it. When you said that, I'm like, yeah, that guy probably thinks he's...
We were just the internet, all of us.
Mumford & Sons is a... Are they Scottish or Irish or British or... I mean, they're British.
Irish.
I don't need any more folk music.
But they're basically... Yeah. They're a British Isles band that gives you the sense that they're mad about things that happened in another time.
That's okay.
Your fault, but mine!
I put some on Twitter like that, like American folk music. Like, you can be a folk musician and talk about the time you worked at Sam Goody in 97. Like,
yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
Still, I mean, if you want to get to the blue collar roots of folk music, your job was done away with by technology.
Where is,
you know, not quite, you know, out in the fields with a scythe and then a threshing table.
That's
it's the same thing.
But
there was a whole crop of bands
of the like, you know, and I put Mumford and Sons in there with Decemberists and Midlake. It's all these. There was this kind of this like frontier rock where it's like we're describing.
Frontier
I wouldn't
rock.
Put Van Horses in frontier.
Really,
rock.
Wouldn't put it along with the Decemberists and Midlake, that sounds like a combination of those two bands.
No, because thematically, Band of Horses are singing about contemporary things.
It's weed is what they're singing about.
Well, but fine. So they're singing about weed. But you take Decemberists, you take Midlake, you take Mumford and Sons, and there's this kind of anachronistic quality to the theme of what they're singing about is like this is from an era gone by that they're singing about themes from an old era.
I haven't listened to the lyrics of Mumford and Sons. I had no idea they were singing about old things.
It's just all about love.
It's like old
love's the
music,
oldest thing of all.
Well, yeah, but so it's like Flogging Molly and shit like that.
Yeah.
Believe me, everyone on the internet's going to tell me I'm 50 different ways of wrong, and that's fine. But I'm allowed to. I'm entitled to my opinion, and that is how I perceive
but
them.
What's new music? What's a new sound? You know what it is? It's dubstep, and it's fucking terrible.
Kyle, I don't know if you heard dubstep and Korn's new song. There's a Skrillex and Korn song.
Oh, turns out some guy told me online it's an entire album they did together. It's not just the one song.
It's like two trucks full of suck crashing.
Yeah.
The worst of all worlds.
Like they even started in the first place.
Let's do our dubstep Mumford & Sons. We'll do Dubford & Sons.
Dubford
& Sons.
But it was not
That's the heavy metal. Why is that dubstep?
Well, because I can't make electronic dubby noises.
Michael Winslow should be seen a resurgence with all this dubstep.
No shit.
Oh my God.
One man... Dubstep.
If they were to remake Police Academy now, his character would do the dubstep.
He's the captain. Reggie Watts.
He's the new... Yeah.
He's the new Mahoney.
We did a show in Dallas. It was in Dallas or Houston. It was Dallas where the other side of the club, like the other side of the venue, was like a dubstep concert going on.
Well, there were basically several rooms within... There were several different performance halls within this one venue. Mm-hmm. And it was all like teenagers, like fucking sweaty teenagers.
Barely clothed teenagers.
Oh, God. It was so hot. And then it turns out the way to dance to dubstep is to just do all that pre-breakdancing moves. All those moves where you're just kind of like getting ready to breakdance.
Where you're about to go, you're about to go in the circle, but you don't quite. Yeah, you're just dancing around the circle.
That's all dubstep dancing is.
I mean, and not to sound totally old about it, like it. I've seen videos where it's definitely, it can accompany a really great video. It does work in certain contexts.
It's good for montages of fights.
It works. I don't want to.
You feel like it needs a visual component rather than just an audio component.
I feel it's a type of music that came up because of visual components.
I think
somebody had a video in mind and then made a soundtrack for it.
And then it just became its own thing. Yeah. I like the idea. I like what you say about the pre-breakdance moves, that it looks like someone is about to jump into an imaginary well and they're trying to psych themselves up to do it, but they never actually do it.
Here we go.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to jump this time. Come on, can't
Jerry,
do it,
you're not going to do it.
I'm going to do it, man. I'm going to do it.
Oh, jeez.
I'm going to dubbity do it.
I had no hot water in my hotel in Atlanta, and I likened taking a freezing cold shower to, like, I guess it sounds like that, but I likened it to, like, a reluctant white guy about to get into a double Dutch game. So I was just at one end of the shower, like, this is going to suck. This sucks. Oh, I hate this so much. And I just jumped. Been there, and don't jump back out for a few seconds.
When did you, first of all, when did you move to Los Angeles?
2003.
And when did you start to,
10 years, baby.
When did you start to feel like, oh, this stuff that I'm saying on stage is really who I am, as opposed to I'm just writing jokes?
I know exactly what it was. It was right after I bombed in Aspen.
Aspen was tough. Aspen were tough crowds.
It was like just rich people.
Yeah.
And then you get there on the merits of, like, my set was just complaining about a job and being poor and a piece of shit. And then it's just rich white people looking at you going, what? How could you? What? How could things be bad for you?
Why is he complaining about making $250,000 a year?
Yeah. But after that, I bombed at that, and I came back. I'm like, well, that was my shot, and I blew it. All right, now I can just do whatever on stage. Like, I just, that's when the beard came.
That's when you gave yourself the out. I remember, didn't you have like at 30?
At 30, I was going to quit. I was going to move back to Chicago at 30.
Not quit, but move back to Chicago.
Move back and see what happens.
Yeah, young people always say dumb shit like that. When I'm 30, I'm just going to fucking give it up. And you get to 30 and you're like, I'm still vibrant.
I don't have much else going on otherwise. It's not like a bunch of other opportunities were popping up. But no, it was 30. I turned 30 in December and then was like, all right, this is the age I said I was going to do something. Found out about Aspen, went to Aspen, bombed at Aspen, but came back with this renewed, it doesn't matter. I'm just talking about whatever. There's nothing on the horizon. I'm just going to talk about whatever I want to talk about. And that's where it started.
And then and then you got Carson Daly.
Carson Daly came that year, which was actually, it was such a nice way to enter things.
Yeah.
I mean, people go all over the guy, but he was all right. I mean, he's still his show, he's still bands you never see on MTV or won't even hear about. He does put a lot of unknown acts on there.
The guys that make that show and him, they're all very good at exposing stuff. They did a piece on the Meltdown, Kumail Allen on the Meltdown show. And it was just they shot it well. It's a nicely done piece. And I started watching other stuff.
He's a good guy.
No, it's good. They cover good stuff on there, but I love the out on that episode after they come out of the Meltdown package. He's like, what is he playing?
He's playing pool.
Yeah.
And or shuffleboard. Shuffleboard or pool.
Shuffleboard. Yeah, sure. And he just looks up and he goes, who knew that was going on there?
Yeah, it could have been anything.
Yeah. Well, that was probably a day of generic raps.
Yeah, yeah.
Of
exactly.
Generic rap rounds. You're just going to give you an activity and then you just look up.
Yeah,
and
exactly. The rest will be VO.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't really know where we're going to put this yet, so just keep it open.
Yeah.
Hey, Carson. Oh, my TV show.
I didn't see you come in.
You know, it's like there's going to be a point
where
it's like
they're going to
have a 10-year anniversary.
Just me chilling playing shuffleboard with the lighting crew around.
Oh, I didn't see you there.
By the way, playing shuffleboard alone is like stumbling onto someone playing tennis alone. It's a weird. This is get
physically grueling.
The most physically demanding thing
this
there is.
This guy's amazing.
This guy's really good.
Go back and forth.
His art's gonna blow.
But then, you also did Channel 101 stuff around that time.
Yeah,
too.
People had me in Channel 101 when I first got out here. Ryan Ridley was he moved out about the same time, and he was stand up in Chicago, but does more. He does TV writing now. But he was he moved out with just Channel 101. That was his focus. That's what he was gonna do. I was like, I didn't even know what it was. So because of him, they had me. Him and Danny Jelinek.
Yep.
So there's always something going on.
When did the Face Fucking Rabbits animated piece surface?
Oh, that was on the first album. That was on
But did someone just make that for you, or did you?
6 Point guys made that, right?
6 Point, yeah.
6 Point Hard.
Oh, 6 Point made those.
Yeah, but that was like they allow the people there to, like, any of the guys or the animators there to, like, make their own projects and utilize, like, the people there. And that was kind of one of those little projects, right?
Yeah, it was actually management. God, he's like, you know, it'd be a really good idea for the album is to put on an animated thing. We know these guys at 6 Point Harness. I was like, okay, you know, it's not like a good idea. And just, he just sent me one still of what it was going to be. I'm like, you know what you're doing. Like, I don't want to put any influence in. This is what you do. I don't want to mess with it.
Do you feel like you have a mind for any of the businessy stuff? Or you're just like, I just want to do comedy and just give me a mic and tell me where to go? Or do you really secretly like...
My thing is like looking, like, I don't look at what people did to become successful. I look at what people did to fuck it all up and try to avoid that. I think it's easier to avoid giant mistakes if I know people have made them, because I don't know what, this is it. I told jokes and I got this far. Keep telling jokes and keep writing jokes. That's all I know.
Is there one big mistake that you can think of that people should avoid that you saw that you're like, yeah, don't do that?
Just thinking that the money's always going to keep coming.
Right.
You know, I don't know where it's going to come from. I mean, my saving grace is I tell people when to watch Workaholics.
Right. The voice of Comedy Central.
That's it. That's like, I forget, because that check goes somewhere and gets put into account. And so I forget. Like, that can go away.
Right.
Yeah. Once that does.
They scramble.
Yeah.
But it won't, because you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Man. Yeah. You're going to have your own show in Vegas soon, just like Penn Jillette.
I forgot he was the voice.
He was the guy. Yeah.
He was Comedy Central for the longest time. Only on Comedy Central.
Early, I think he was like one of the first guys. Right?
I think he was the first
guy. It was just Wally Collins hosting stand-up.
Stand-up.
All it was.
Short attention span theater,
and they were showing Whose Line reruns and
Kids in the Hall reruns,
and then Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, they got Mr. Science Theater.
When did Comedy Central start?
It was the Comedy Channel. There was Comedy Channel and Ha. There was Ha Network and Comedy Channel. And I don't know what the ownership was, but it was like, I think one maybe was Viacom and one was HBO or something or other.
Yeah.
And then they merged to form Comedy Central. And this was probably late 80s, early 90s.
And that's why there's the two, like the whole thing about Comedy Central. There's the New York and the LA offices. And that's kind of how that happened,
Not
right?
so much anymore. But for the longest time,
yeah,
I guess that's probably what it was. But yeah, so they were, and I think that probably goes back to, I first remember watching Comedy Central in like 92 maybe. So I don't think the Comedy Channel or Ha lived for very long as solo channels. And I think they just, I assume, just realized like, it's probably really just for one thing.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me, is like having that, like it was just stand-up clips.
Yeah.
Like, this one's about food, and it just being... You know,
that was Short Attention Span Theater, where they would like theme the shows. But
you know what that was? That was the precursor to the playlist that you might have in your, like an iTunes playlist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was basically a keyword playlist. Now here's 9 comics talking about beards.
That was the one I had.
Your beard, by the way,
shampoo your beard,
is fucking gorgeous.
I trimmed it yesterday.
It's like a topiary. Like, it grows
straight. That's what I'm jealous of.
It's bonsai like hair.
No, I'm really just
a little snip here and there. Set back from it. Don't go all at it once. Little snip, go back.
Snip, snipperoo.
Couple days later, come back in with a little bit.
Yeah, it's a constant.
It is a constant. It's one of the few things that I can. It's relaxing.
Yeah, I can't grow with that. But like it grows out and patchy, and that's why I always end up just kind of keeping the stubble.
Your face is your own Zen garden.
It is. I also don't have a chin, so the beard helps there. this is where my face stops. Look at that stupid.
this is where my face stops.
I didn't make friends with Kyle until he had a beard.
This Kyle's
just more interesting.
That beard changed. It changed. That beard. This one. Not so much. But that one.
It's not the same one anymore. I'm sure it's grown out.
07 was a good depression beard. It was after Aspen. Like that was part of the whole. Like it's all over. So. Big stupid beard,
yeah,
and it wasn't. I don't want to say I got in early on the beard game, but we're looking. Like
there were no beards before 2007.
Zach Galifianakis.
When he was depressed, he grew his beard. It was after Late World with Zach was canceled,
right.
And then that's when he just like grew the huge beard out.
Yeah, it was like that. Was like I read that story. I was like, oh, this is very simple.
Whatever happened to that
drinking,
guy?
Started drinking and grew a beard. Yeah.
Whatever happened to him?
I don't know.
I grew this when Attack of the Show got canceled.
The podcast was my beard. I started the podcast when something else failed.
It's like wearing pajamas.
Yeah, Chris,
like
you're totally straight.
I clearly don't care. So.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Kyle, and I apologize for this question, but it's just because I wonder about these kinds of things.
Let's cut deep. Let's get into stuff.
Do you feel like your special is called Whiskey Icarus? Whiskey Icarus.
That's a tongue twister.
Whiskey Icarus! Do you feel like the drinking was a really huge, and I'm sorry to just take it here out of nowhere. Do you feel like that was a really huge part of your comedy? Do you feel like you can or can't perform without it? I know you quit for a while, and I'm not judging, and I'm not
quit.
Asking.
No,
but
quit.
Oh, I thought you scaled back or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
I scaled forward.
not to make it about that, but
let's talk about it. I'm because you're sober.
I am, and I don't think everyone. I don't think everyone should be. I just think I should be. But I'm just curious. Curious to get your take on it because there are two paths in my life where it's like one path is I continue doing this and one path is I don't. And so I'm always interested to find out from people how they do manage it because some people can.
Well, I think I'm writing for comedy. I'm trying to come up with different perspectives because you can't all just be like, I got drunk and then I ate dumb shit, which is what
Twitter. You hold that for Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter. That's all Twitter is.
Yeah, exactly.
That is the only reason I use Twitter.
Can't wait with this pizza.
I do enjoy his Twitter.
The only reason.
You got to bring back Why I'm Dead or what was it?
I'm Dead. It's all my fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a fun one. But the drinking thing, I drink a lot. I'm probably drink every night, but I don't drink by myself. And sometimes it is just like, maybe it's four beers. That's more than most people.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think it's a lot.
Right.
Which is maybe a problem.
Well, also, you drink shit beers, don't you?
Yeah. I just have six scotches a night. It doesn't affect me. Yeah, it's like I just drink Budweiser and, socially. I like to get a little buzz going. But I don't get teetotal all the time. I can't perform drunk. I won't. I'll have a beer on stage with me. It's more aesthetic, and that's what I like to sip while I'm up there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I won't go on stage drunk. I mean, in town's different, 5-minute, 10-minute spots like we're talking about. But I feel if somebody paid to go to a club, I should be in a condition to deliver. I just know I can't deliver. I'm not funnier when I'm drunk. People were laughing at me when I was drunk, but that didn't mean the jokes were good.
Right.
So now I realize that, maybe two beers. If I have two beers by the late show, that's it.
Well, I used to have to get, there were some shows in the early days where I would get so nervous. Like if I was ever performing at Largo, when the Monday Night Largo show was at its peak, in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. when there were just, there were lines to get in, the place was jam packed and you were performing alongside, Cross and Patton and people like that, who were just so fucking amazing to watch. And I would get so nervous. I would pound like four beers before I got on stage.
Yeah.
And I could perform that way, but it got to a certain point where it did not work anymore. And I would just kind of stand on stage with a blank head and be like, I don't think this is good.
Slurring words. I hate it. There's a gift. Slurring words or forgetting how a joke goes. Ugh.
And it also, I think sometimes you have to think about who do I want my audience to be? And if I'm totally drunk on stage, is that the audience that I necessarily want to have to be that guy for? Because that's going to attract that. And then everyone's going to be like, let's get fucked up.
That's one of those things. I mean, I know there's some comics that have disdain for the crowd that they bring.
Like, you sowed these seeds, friend.
Yeah, and I just get guys that look like me. do you get that? Like, I get it, man.
Yeah.
I get what you're talking about.
Yeah, every once in a while, like, I'll get a tweet from a guy, like, I just ordered my, Jonah Radio shirt, and I'll look at it, I'm like, is that me? Am I?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Am I tweeting myself from the fucking Midwest again?
The podcast Mosher and I do, we release t-shirts. Four Eyes and Beard is the name of the fucking podcast, because he had a beard. I didn't have a beard at the time. But
break it down.
Everyone, every single person that took a picture looks like me with a beard.
What?
That's
every
hilarious.
Single picture.
This, like, the beard was a thing when I was, like, doing comedy. People would, like, look at me right away going on stage. It was something to look at. And now every time I go, like, local guys all look like me. And not, like, not saying that I influence. It's a real dick thing to say, like, everybody's just ripping off my style, man.
Yeah.
But, like, no, but, like, the, you know, the Louis C.K. not liking yourself, was, I mean, that was always a theme in comedy. But then also to look, you know, schlubby with a beard and do I'm a piece of shit comedy is popular. And people are doing it great. But now is, like, headlining after three guys that just do a great job doing that. Like, I got to start talking about something else.
Because well, they're still
I've
broke.
I've been trying to write. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're still drinking and they got the new. They can write about anything because they're newer. I'm like, yeah. I'm just trying to write about. I'm trying to write things positively. Like
yeah.
Look at a subject and instead of knee-jerk trying to make fun of it, write about something you like or try and pick the up. Like, oh, why do I hate this? What's wrong with me? Why do I dislike
this? That's a real Chicago style right now, I've noticed. So, like, a lot of you guys, like you and TJ and Pete and Kumail, it's like, it's this, like, incredulous, like wonder of just, like, it's like, can you believe this? This is amazing.
And I can't, well, and just to look through the lens of comedy always when you're walking around, like, is this material? For that to be naked all the time, like, this sucks. Look at this is stupid. Like, that's a miserable existence, even if the act is good because of it. I don't want to live that way.
Do you feel that, this is an interesting comedy nerd question for you. You know, as you're getting more popular as what people perceive to be your comedy, do you feel more beholden to, do you feel more of an obligation to write that? Or, like, as your career gets better, your personal life's going to change, your environment's going to change, some things will get better, you might get happier in some ways that you weren't before. So do you feel more of an obligation to represent who you really are as Kyle or to keep up that staged Kyle that people got popular?
Yeah. No, I've got to, like, be who I am at the moment. I can't be like, man, my day job sucks. Like, right. I don't have a day. For a half hour, I go in and tell people when to watch Workaholics. That's my day job.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I can't. Yeah, that's just a lot. I'm not going to Larry the Cable Guy. My friend Brian Cook calls me hipster Larry the Cable Guy. And it's so, and it hurts because it's perfect. Like, yeah, eat two Big Macs at midnight,
you're
buddy.
Kyle,
nice to
meet you. You're Kyle the Artisanal Butcher.
That's a good
t-shirt. I want the t-shirt.
Kyle the Artisanal Butcher. Yeah.
Why are you wearing an apron?
It's the thing. Don't worry about it.
Expect.
Just all these flannels I buy have no sleeves. That's Larry the Cable Guy talking.
Craft beer.
So I took those shirts and I sewed sleeves onto them.
And then rolled the sleeves up. The blue collar ethic.
I'll just take a beef chuck. There's 15 different kinds.
It's plaid collars. Plaid collar comedy tour.
You know, Pacific Northwest. These calves we only let listen to Mumford and Sons. And the meat is.
I thought we said hipster.
We're tender.
So, are you touring a lot now, or are you?
That's it, man. Just the road. Yeah.
Where have you been that you like?
That's what's great about comedy. I go to cities that I would never want to, like, have no interest in going to as a trip, but then you go there because of comedy and you find out, oh, this place is great.
Have you been to the Tacoma Comedy Club yet?
I just did that one in December.
It's fucking fun.
It was great.
I've been preaching about that place because whenever I find a club that it's run well that I really like, I want to tell everyone they should go perform there.
Well, and they had three clubs in that city, which is not, they won't let that glass thing go there. They really forced the idea that they're a glass city. They got the glass museum. Every hotel a glass sculpture. It's like, give it a fucking rest. I get it. Yeah. Like, they're so desperate.
Every city has glass.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's like the kid that came back one summer and, like, now he's goth. Like, I'm goth. Yeah, yeah. Did I tell you I'm goth? Look how goth I am. Like, that's how the whole city is about their glass.
My bedroom's black.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't look at it. It is.
Don't look at it. It totally is.
I'm not totally sure.
It is. Yeah.
But I've done, like, I just did Laughing Skull.
Yeah, Atlanta.
Was it last weekend? That place is fun.
Yep.
Dallas Improv. Surprise.
Addison.
Fun. Addison, Texas. Yep. Yeah.
That's a good room.
I normally don't do the improvs too much just because
you don't like chicken fingers. Maybe.
Well, when they're in, like, when it's just part of, like, the preconceived date night area of town, like, you could tell whatever parent company owns the bar and the club. And it's,
Addison, Texas is really interesting because there's no residential zone in Addison. It's all commercial. So,
oh, really?
Is yeah, that the case? It's all businesses. And what, and like the hotel that you stay at when you perform at the Addison Improv.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's all restaurants and malls and movie theaters.
It is. It's pretty suburban. It is like every chain kind of.
The first time I performed there, someone was like, "Welcome to Addison, home of a $100,000 millionaire." Like everyone everyone doesn't make a lot of money, but everyone drives Mercedes. You know, it's like one of those cultures.
Then
you get,
yeah, and then the bar across the street is like, or across the hallway is like a dueling piano bar.
The dueling piano bar.
I don't know. Why is that?
Well, I mean,
it should be
piano cage match.
I want two pianists enter.
I want to see much more violence if it's dueling.
Yeah. Well, I want to know.
Like, if like one's better than the other, they can press like a certain chord, and then the other guy's fucking piano explodes. Yeah.
I just want to know who's going to play New York State of Mind better.
And I just can't wait till I see that one white girl that thinks it's hilarious to dance to Baby Got Back. Because I'm still looking out there, guy. And I'm not seeing a girl clever enough to realize.
You got it, man. You got it.
I'm not seeing a girl clever enough to know that that's going to be really funny.
I think they should add a Scanners element to the dueling piano scenario. Where it's like the harder they play, and then someone else's, the other guy's nose starts to bleed, and then their fucking their frontal lobe just unfolds onto the front of the piano as they explode.
You gotta give up.
I got this. Dueling piano.
The stupider he gets, he's just
play Crocodile Rock.
How do you write? Do you write? Do you sit down and write, or do you just go up on stage and just sort of rip it out?
Go up there and figure it out. That's more conversational. Why? What do? You sit down, you write it?
I just started doing it that way.
Yeah,
with the new hour.
That's right. When I write my worst stuff,
and it's been, but I love it because I don't feel so trapped. You know, I think the 10-minute set comedy writing mentality is, well, I have 10-15 minutes. I have to get as many jokes in here as possible, and so you start thinking about comedy in terms of the turn and the jokes.
Yeah.
And not as much about, well, who am I and what do I want to say? And when you have more time, don't you think it feels like, oh, I can talk, and then the comedy sort of comes out of this me as a person, as opposed to, how am I going to say the word pussy at the end of this and make it the turn?
Well, I see, like, I don't know if it's like the Louis C.K. influence, but comedy's, you know, more popular than ever, and you see guys going up there like, I'm just going to bullshit and, you know, talk about my life. Like, no. You write jokes. You're new. You write jokes. Yeah.
Louis can bullshit, and it sounds like material.
You're 22.
Yeah.
You're depressed at 22. Cheer up.
Well, and I think, you know, I think if you watch Louis's older stuff, and I think Louis's material pre 2003 is much. I mean, like, it's all really obviously well written, but it's much more
conceptual
joke based.
The animals,
like,
racist,
right? Or like the guy in hell who's like, oh, suck my cock. Did you just blow that guy? Right. You know, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Like they're more like he's really writing more bits and concepts as opposed to now.
Yeah, cool. Because then you start, and then you have that skill set. So when you are just riffing, and you're like, oh, this would fit exactly. This is how a joke would fit in here.
It's basically,
this is where, you know.
I think it's like people trying to become a master, like people being like, I could sculpt David. Do you know how to draw? Nah, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, you really should learn.
Seeing Louis C.K., I mean, it looks so easy to be up there nonchalantly. I mean, I aped Hedberg when I started, which is, probably the best, because those were jokes, like figuring out jokes to do. I mean, granted, it was personality that sold a lot of them, but so that's, I was doing like one-liner stuff like Hedberg.
Yeah, when I started, I tried to do one-liner stuff too, and I was like, it's not me.
Yeah, the defense mechanism of staring at the ground and just going, here's a joke. Not good? Okay, next joke. This wouldn't work. Put a star.
I'm not going to engage to the audience, so no matter how I do, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm a writer, guys. That was me. I was such a prick. I'm a writer. I really shouldn't be here. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
What'd you write? These jokes to tell.
So you're a comedian.
Yeah.
I'm a writer comedian.
Yeah, but it's really on the page. It's on the page is where the
humor is. Being a comedian
is
just a way to get them out.
It just seems so needy being a comedian. I'm a writer.
What do you think the goal of a comedian is? Do you think the goal of a comedian is... Do you think the goal of a comedian is really just should be funny? Or do you think the goal of a comedian is to, well, I want to be as much of myself on stage as I can be, and then that's funny?
Is there social responsibility to it? Like, somebody brought that up too. Like, people listen to you I think I went off on Twitter. I'm like, oh yeah, because let's listen to comedians to like boil major issues down, oversimplify things, and use that as a soundbite to determine how you should feel politically or socially. It's like, no, they're comedians. That's what they do. You shouldn't base, you know, your worldview on that. But then somebody's like, well, no, you have a social responsibility as a comedian. Like, you're the mouthpiece of stuff. Like, I don't believe in that. I don't think
you're a mouthpiece.
Do you? How does your throat hold up on the road? I lose my voice a lot.
I don't really scream in the act. I mean, I'm not. It's if I'm getting wasted afterwards, it gets bad. But I'm not. Again, I'm like, I'm drinking. But
yelling over dueling pianos.
Yeah, screaming and trying to meet ladies over dueling pianos. I really like the way you danced to "Baby Got Back." No, my voice is all right. Pete was one. Holmes gave me, like, he gets boxes of this weird, I don't know, some kind of gypsy grease that he swallows.
I remember when
his packets of gypsy grease that he swallows because he screams.
When TJ was doing mashup, like, he would go off stage, like, in between, like, bringing all the comics down and doing all his bits, which is a lot of screaming. But, like, he would, like, go back and he was, like, this kind of, like, weird little steamy oxygen thing that he would breathe into to, like, coat his throat.
TJ was?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Or just freebasing. I'm not sure. Again, I can't tell the difference.
Again, maybe there's one of those things where it's like the mistakes that I'm making that I'm not realizing. Like, you know what? Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Eventually, you age.
Eventually.
And you get hurt. Things go south.
You'll find that out soon with the pizzas.
I know. I've tried to be better about my
diet. And you're a small guy.
Yeah, I'm a little guy.
Yeah, you're a little guy. I get upset about that, where it's like I see me, like, if I can drink beers and eat pizza.
I don't tweet about the balancing act that I do of, like, oh, yeah, I exercised and I rode bikes and I, you know, eat usually pretty well.
That'd be a lot less
but
fun.
I would just have, I
no,
would just like, even though,
you know,
even outside the weight gain, I would just have, like, heartburn. I'd be, like, just upset all the time.
That's my problem. I'm not very affected by stomach.
You know what you should do? I think you could find great success with going out and talking literally about that stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
Because then people would be like, come on.
Yeah. You know, like, I put a whole cucumber in there and it
fills
the
up
biggest
the
thing color. About those juicers is cleaning them.
That's why I don't get one. That's why I spend the money to get one from a store.
Oh, you're cleaning carrot pulp out of everything.
You get one of those centrifuge ones. They're pretty easy to clean.
I got Chloe a Vitamix for Christmas because she loves
it's good for smoothies,
not
for juicing.
Will not Vitamix. Shut up about the Vitamix.
Yeah, it's like a power blender.
The Vitamix also has a heating element that you can make soup in, and it just heats it up.
Yeah, this episode of the Nerdist Podcast brought to you by Stamps.com.
No, Vitamix is not giving us anything. I've given them money.
I was like, I had to buy it, and like, I was like, oh, I'll just take this. I was getting it for D for Christmas, and I was like, oh, I'll just take that one. And then he's like, all right, cool. And then, like, I saw how much it was, and like, I had this, like, oh, wait. This, like, moment where I'm like, how much do I love her?
my sister works for Steve Harvey, for the Steve Harvey show, so she gets all this free stuff. She got a Vitamix.
Oh,
like
shit.
Free,
got hooked up.
Like free Dick Tracy suits?
Like give, yeah.
Damn.
He did own his own clothing store, correct?
Yeah, mm. Everything had
nine buttons, no less.
Whenever I saw Steve Harvey's clothes, it's just like these very angular lines and bright colors. I'm like, they look like Dick Tracy villain suits.
It's like an 80s drawing, like fashion drawing.
Yes!
Yeah, exactly.
I'm in fashion. These are my drawings.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
wide shoulders that go into a peak. Yeah,
triangles to the waist.
Yeah,
it's a contemporary
MC Hammer.
Contemporary zoot suits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's toned it down a little bit. Yeah. I was wondering, there's no binge eating, like, health food shows, like... I'd like to see somebody eat so much salad.
I tried that.
Salad whore.
Who could eat salad till they just shit their pants? Yeah. That's all that would happen.
That was all, yeah, exactly. But you'd feel like the guy still, he's like, you had so many salads. Like, yeah, I'm just going to go for a walk. Just like, still just kind of do whatever he wants. Yeah, I don't feel all right.
Feel good.
That's my pitch.
I feel real good.
Health food challenges.
Where are you
can't eat unhealthy.
I want to do a pitch where it's follow me while I stress eat, and then we'll just see. Like last night when I was like, I'm going to go get a Diet Coke and five donuts. I was like, in
five
the store,
donuts?
They had just brought out the blueberry donuts.
All right.
Okay, that's one.
On board, right?
That's
one. Then the red velvet donut came out.
Two. Wait, where the fuck is this red velvet donut?
Oh, it's at SK's.
Did you keep it at five because Lee's like, well, I didn't eat.
Yeah, I didn't
eat
half a dozen.
I didn't eat a half a dozen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad.
They call that a Myro's dozen.
Semantics, guys.
And then I fell asleep watching the Sam Mendes commentary on Skyfall's Blu-ray.
What a life.
How many times have you seen that movie now?
Seven.
God damn.
I remember, like early mid 20s. Fucking every night I would get wasted. I would like start the night off with a fucking 40 ounce of like Bud Light. I would end the night with a fucking huge ass fucking burrito from Cactus Taqueria on Vine, and then I would just fall asleep on my couch watching like Shaun of the Dead or Stand by Me. It was like, and that was almost every night. Every night. And now, like, I fucking watch what I eat, and I fucking gain more weight than I ever have before.
Because you're worried about it. I think.
Sad to say, but getting a DUI, of the other reasons, it was, you know, bound to happen, and it's better for me that I don't drink and drive. No Del Taco runs after a bar.
I don't know if I knew about the DUI. How did it turn out?
That's why the album's called Whiskey Icarus, because that's what I called finally getting a DUI.
You drank too close to the sun.
Whiskey Icarus finally flew a little too close to the sun. Yeah. It was. I mean, it's sad. Like, I'm not saying it from a point of pride that it was bound to happen. Just, I mean, you go out and drink four or five beers. I can handle myself on four or five beers.
Yeah.
But like, I got pulled over on Franklin. I was doing 5 miles an hour over the limit. And I was,
following
a car too closely. No, I know what it was. And I don't know if I talk about it on the special. I was singing.
Really?
I was driving my truck and I was singing. I was singing Tesla. Because I'm not gonna listen to Tesla and sing along.
Yeah.
Maybe that was what the ticket was really about.
Yeah.
Well, let's get him. There's no law against Tesla, but just take this.
It was Tesla's first drummer that pulled him over.
Oh, what is this later year stuff, huh?
No thanks.
Got no mechanical resonance.
I left because I wanted to.
I had other pursuits. Lady was pressuring me.
So it was just a light buzz and 5 miles over the speed limit. Those are all very minor things.
Yeah.
You've been drunk way more than that and driven.
Yes.
Yeah.
Never again.
I talked myself out of a DUI once.
Did you?
Yeah, I lied up a storm. And luckily,
you,
I
to
still,
yourself where you said, don't get in the car, Jonah. Don't get in the car, Jonah.
No, I wish. It would have been safer for everyone involved. I was in South Pasadena trying to find someone's house like late at night. And I took a turn. And I was like in the wrong lane to turn down the street. It was one of those like multiple, you know, five light things. And it was fine. No one was around. But like, you know, they saw it and they pulled me over. And luckily, I still had my old Hawaii license. And like, I just started going, I'm visiting my brother. He lives in San Diego. I drove up here in the morning because I was like, just this crazy elaborate lie came out where I was like, it's his girlfriend. It's not his girlfriend. Like, I mean, they kind of off and on, but like, it's like, she works on this studio and she said I could hang out for a day and I've been on set all day.
Oh, you're annoying. Just go.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, they're like, well, can you call someone to pick you up? I'm like, I think I remember a number.
Did you cry?
What?
Did you cry?
I got close, but I was a man about it, and they respected it.
You know,
Yeah.
Men don't cry. They just let their voice crack while they try to hold back the emotion. Yeah.
And I just don't know what I'm doing. I got my flight tomorrow back home, and
it goes up into Bobcat register.
I just work in a poi factory.
In a poi factory. That was racist.
What?
It's not racist.
Just bring it back.
That's fine.
They make poi there.
They do. It's not good.
Nope.
It's not a good thing to eat.
What is it? What?
It's taro root smashed down, so it just kind of becomes this like stringy pudding kind of thing, and it just doesn't taste good. And then people say, put sugar in it, and it just doesn't.
Sound good.
It's not good, but it's like the Hawaiian meal.
It sounds like the stuff you make paper mache with, where you you dip paper in it and then just decoupage
something. Yeah, it does have that consistency.
Yeah.
And this is what I do every time.
Where are you performing next, Kyle?
Doing a Glasgow Comedy Festival.
Oh, Glasgow.
That's coming up. Yeah, that's in March. That's coming up soon.
Pretty ballsy.
You been over there?
I've been through Glasgow, but I've never performed there. I don't think I would do well in Glasgow.
I don't do well overseas.
I just feel like someone would break a bottle over my face in Glasgow.
Likely to happen to me. I'll take one in your place, in your honor.
I appreciate that. What's next? Have you done Edinburgh?
No. I don't want to go there for a month.
It's a long time.
That sounds kind of miserable.
Didn't Kumail do it?
Yeah, but he only did for half the time.
Yeah, he did
But like, I think it was Kurt Braunohler was talking about, like, you get this Edinburgh depression. where just like your body can't drink anymore, but that's what everyone does every night.
I've heard that.
Well, I was talking to Pepitone about it and when we were at Sketchfest, and he was talking about how like now he's getting booked like all over Europe. Like, really? Like, yeah, he's going to like, he was in Norway, and then we were all just like, yeah, because you're what they think an American guy is.
Because he has that New York voice.
Yeah, he's got the fucking, he yells like he thinks we all, like,
but he also like just disses like America, like a lot of it's like, it's
and
like,
he also shits on
we are the worst, you know.
He's great. He's fucking great.
It'd be like having an Australian comic kill over here and back in Australia. They're like, oh, yeah, we don't like that guy.
Yeah.
That's what I was like seeing the same. I was in Australia.
Oh, wait, that came out wrong. I'm sorry. I love Eddie Pepitone.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Okay.
But like seeing the same version of hack comedy with an accent and then seeing it kill.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like,
yes!
The guy like, anybody from this place? All right, clap. All right, anybody from here? Clap. All right, from this place? Fuck your sheep, okay? And people like, this room's going, oh, God, this is the best thing we've seen. He was the MC, and I went up and just ate it.
I had that experience where I was doing a show, and it was the crowd was not loving anyone, and then Australian guy with a crazy hat comes out.
Yeah.
And it's just like, they just fucking carried him out of the room.
No. Like, I just and like, what was working down there? I mean, I did a show with Kumail. Kumail killed, rightfully so. And I was like, it was okay at the show we were on, but this other one, oh, that was Ireland where the sheep fucking thing happened. That was the joke there. But seeing what's appreciated in these places where it's just somebody just like if. You know, like Americans that go there and kill, and it's the most basic, like men and women stuff.
Yeah.
And it kills over there, like, because it's just like, oh, it's, I don't know why it kills over there.
Yeah. I think you get some extra points for having a different accent. If you have a different accent, there's a package thing that's involved that's part of your presentation that immediately people are a little charmed by because your accent's different.
But I don't think, I don't think being an American helps. Elsewhere, but over here, I think it does.
Being an American here works pretty good.
Being American, America's best.
Yeah,
thing.
It's probably one of the best things in the world.
It's the greatest thing any human could achieve.
Yeah. I'm really proud of myself for being American.
Yeah, I
was close.
70 years earlier.
Ooh.
Not even that. 1960.
55, 60. Technically, my thing still stands.
55 is when it became a state.
I remember there's an I Love Lucy episode where they're talking about it.
Yeah.
Hawaii becoming a state.
And what were you eating when you watched that?
All the chocolates, just like Lucy. Right. Just like Lucy.
Except there was no conveyor belt.
It was my tongue.
Depression was the conveyor belt.
Oh, God.
It was me pulling the tablecloth closer and closer instead of getting up to get food.
Remember that episode where she put too much yeast in the bread and then the loaf became the size of the kitchen? That's my dream.
Just
that's
your,
my dream.
Your way through that.
That's how you kill yourself. You're just sitting there. He hot pocketed himself.
He died as he lived, preparing the hot pocket.
My emotional problems with food are hilarious.
It makes you feel good when you eat it, though.
Oh, God.
The wheezy laugh is really what made that line fucking sail.
That might have been the cigarettes.
You can't just eat Myra dozens of things all the time. Sometimes you got to grout it with cigarettes.
Yeah,
that's right,
delicious.
Kids.
Now I want to drink and eat.
Nerdist podcast. I know. Let's just do it.
Now I want to drink and eat.
I'll watch you guys.
You can eat.
You guys want to go to happy hour at the counter?
You don't eat. Yeah, you don't. Do you eat? Do you eat shitty stuff? Do you break?
I do eat shitty stuff. I eat shitty stuff all the time. I just don't eat a lot of it. Like if I have a
this guy,
but it's not.
Where
it's
you
not,
can stop yourself.
You're relating to no one.
I know. It's but
next
believe
bite
me,
always tastes better than
with the alcohol gene that I have. It is amazing.
Does that bug you yet?
It doesn't bother me at all. I don't mind the not drinking. I love that I don't drink. It makes me I never regret it.
You feel like you have a leg up on society?
No.
Because you're like, everyone else is a little buzzed right now. I'm at the height.
Yeah, how was hanging out like after you quit? How was going out and then like
it was tough for a year or so because especially when you first quit, you build so many reasons around drinking where it's like, when a good thing happens, I'll go celebrate. When a bad thing happens, I'll go drown my sorrows. Yeah. After a show, we're all hanging out. You know, and so it was And I, you know, like even every day at 6 o'clock, I'm going to watch a Simpsons rerun and have a beer, you know, like it was trying to do all those same things, but without that anchor involved and still try to.
And it feels boring at first until you separate it from your head.
But I'll tell you what
I found
when I was when we were flying back from Las Vegas.
That guy's just wearing a helmet and eating an apple.
He just doesn't care.
We were flying back from Las Vegas on Southwest, and we were in a row. And the guy sat the guy who sat in the aisle. I had the worst visceral reaction because he's
sweating out.
He had been drinking all night, clearly, and I knew with the situation. It was an early morning flight. He probably either didn't go to bed or slept for an hour, and. He just, like, the smell of it, that just ferment, that fucking sweat ferment smell.
Yeah.
And then every time he would turn to look out the window, he would breathe in our direction, and it was just like, and, you know, Chloe could even smell it from her, and it turned my fucking stomach, and I just, it was those moments where I go, I'm so glad I don't, because I knew he did not, there's no way that guy felt
Chloe
good.
Could even smell it from 1 inch next to you.
When you can smell
Southwest.
Someone's...
It's a joke about Southwest.
Yeah, but when you can smell someone's breath across two seats... That's pretty bad.
That actually happened where I fell asleep on a flight. It was a Christmas day in the evening of Christmas that I was flying back from Chicago, and I was like, I guess I'll get a beer. It's Christmas, and then turned into like everybody just buying rounds at this bar. And one of the better jokes I think I've made. I was drinking. It was a roadie for Meatloaf. You could tell still on speed or out of speed, but like. Like his knees bounced when he ate a burrito, like double bass drums with his legs. But he was talking about touring with Meatloaf, and he's like, yeah, he's like, you know, it's like South America, they love Loaf, man. They love him. Loaf.
Loaf.
South America loves him. Europe kills. America, nothing. I'm like, well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Come on! Did he see it coming?
He was not impressed. He
really?
Didn't like it.
Well, I guess he must have heard all the Loaf jokes.
I know, all the Loaf. But that anyway, yeah, wasted, fell asleep on my flight, woke up to a girl just going, here's a piece of gum.
Oh!
He said that to me.
Oh, no!
We're landing. Here's some gum.
Oh!
Because I just...
You want to go out?
Open mouth, snoring.
That's the worst. Oh. I feel so awful for you in the past.
It was like last year.
I feel awful for you not that long ago.
Oh, fuck. I kind of feel bad for that girl.
I am. And then she was in the middle, and the guy in the end was somebody we were drinking with, too. So we were all like, oh, we're on the same flight. What's up, guys? And I constantly fall asleep, and I know I snore. And
I've gotten
to the point
too.
Now, I'm like, just elbow me if I start snoring. So I can say that to somebody next to me.
You should get one of those... One of those crazy machines, not a breathe rice,
like CPAP
the machine. The CPAP machine. Like the oxygen machine that just blows.
That was the other hilarious thing. The car back from Sketchfest to the airport was me, Pepitone, Ian Roberts, and Besser. And it was just everybody but Besser discussing their CPAP machines.
Oh my God.
That's hilarious.
I still don't know what it is. It's just snoring, right?
Keeps your airway open and the air flowing so that you don't.
Yeah,
so that your throat doesn't close
and you sleep better because you have more oxygen going through your body.
I have another friend. I have a friend who was using.
I don't use one anymore, but
oh, you
don't.
Well, another friend of mine was using one, and I was like, "Do you notice any different in your day?" And he goes, yeah, the level of dumb things that I get pissed off about went way down.
Oh, weird.
Like he got way more patient when he was actually. Sleeping all the way through the night.
Oh, the difference was dramatic because what happens is you stop breathing, you wake up, you don't realize you wake up, or your blood oxygen level would dip real low. Like mine, when I did the sleep study, they hook you up to machines, and mine got down to like 80% of blood oxygen level, which is no good. Oh. It was just like...
So you wake up more tired than
if you... Yeah, because they're like, you were actually sleeping in this 8-hour night. You were actually sleeping for an hour and a half.
Dead for weird. 10 minutes.
Yeah. But it's like, I would get an hour and a half of sleep a night for my life.
Somebody explain... Like, I always wake up after 5 hours, and somebody says that's because drinking, like, everything processes after 5 hours.
Yeah.
And so I only sleep 5 hours a night.
Yeah, I don't... When I drink and go to sleep, I don't do that thing where I wake up and like I'm like, oh, I was drinking, so I woke up early. Like, I just sleep through it. It's nice.
Lucky.
Yeah, it's really good.
I always got worried, like, I mean, that's like not a shit joke, but like, like getting beer shits and everything. And then when my body stopped that with like hangovers, like my body was just like, you know what you're doing. We're not going to give you any more warnings. Like, I got worried about that. Like, yeah. I should have, you know.
The hangovers do start happening more and at a shittier pace.
Now I just wake up in the middle of the night because of anxiety, not because of drinking.
Tell me about it.
Panic attacks. Those are fun.
It's 3 a.m. Maybe I have cancer. I don't know.
I thought I was having a heart attack. I told them like they might have to call. If I said call an ambulance from the stage, call an ambulance. It was at San Jose.
Trying to pull a Todd Glass.
Like, yeah. It was like already a terrible show at that San Jose Improv. It was a beautiful theater.
Yeah, it's a great theater. Horrible town.
Yeah. And like I was just having chest pains before I went up there. And I think it's got too much caffeine and then stressed out. But I was like, I'm going to go up here. But if I say call an ambulance when I get off stage.
Call an ambulance.
Yeah, because this is like that was the first time it happened. I'm like, oh, yeah, panic.
Yep.
Stress.
Which unfortunately masks itself as a million different things.
Yeah.
When you start looking up, when you start, if there's nothing medically wrong with you and you're having weird symptoms, write panic attack and then put that symptom and you'll see 500,000 web pages come up that, you know, that say that thing.
Yeah, well, I told the doctor, I'm like, yeah, I'm getting like, I'll get these sharp pains. He's like, you get it at rest or while you're exercising? I'm like, at rest? I'm thinking, it's so bad, it's even at rest that everybody's like, oh, you're fine. I was like, I don't think you're right.
Wouldn't it make less sense for you to be fine when you're resting and getting it?
No, it's nothing should be going wrong. I'm just
it's so worse when you...
Oh, stabbing pain in my chest.
It's so worse when you slow down and your body's just processing all the stress you put on it when you don't have anything else to focus your brain on. When you're just like... Your body's like, all right, here's the check. It's like dropping the check. Your body's dropping the check. And there it was, the abrupt ending. I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable and sorry. Enjoy your burrito.
Thanks, Chris. This is definitely Kyle right now. Shut up, you piece of shit.
That was Nerdist Puppet Show Ending Theater.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 700,000 high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code Nerdist5. Nerdist and the number 5.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.